This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
All right, everyone. This podcast is sponsored by our friends over at BetOnline, your number one source for all of your sports betting needs this season, from baseball, golf, soccer, right all the way to the top fights in UFC, MMA, and boxing. Every stat, every matchup, and even live odds and spreads where the games are being played. When the game's over, head on over to their online casino and get in on a game of blackjack or poker, or unwind with one of their 150 different types of slots. All you gotta do is head over to their website today to get in on the action and use promo code BELIEVE, B-L-E-A-V, for your 50% off welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet online, the game starts here. All right, everyone, welcome into Pick, Axe, and Roll. I just recorded a long episode on the NBA draft with resident Nuggets fan and draft analyst CT Fazio, 24 on Twitter, X, whatever you want to call it. Got a little bit long, so I wanted to split it into two parts on here. Part one features a discussion about the top of the draft, as well as just some thoughts on where Denver's at, and we'll get into some discussion of the backup center position, some different guys there. Part two will be all about the combo guards and some wings, different players that the Nuggets might target with their 28th overall pick and the 56th overall pick in the draft, as well as CT's predictions for what actually happens right at the end. So make sure to check out both parts. Part one goes for about 40 minutes. Part two goes for about 35, I believe. Make sure to check them both out over the next couple of days. Thanks, everyone. Here is CT Fazio. All right, everybody, welcome in to Pickaxe and Roll. I almost said alley-oop, I don't know why I said that, but welcome to the Pickaxe and Roll podcast. Now I'm all flustered, look at me, Jesus. Very excited to have on my guest, CT Fazio from NBA Twitter. He's just killing it right now for Denver Nuggets coverage. You're still writing for Crown Hoops. You're still doing a bunch of stuff, but I think a whole bunch of people are super excited about your Denver Nuggets contributions and your NBA draft contributions. You are a shining star, as I said before the podcast started. Thank you so much for dropping by, my friend. How are you?
Hey, Ryan, doing well. Thanks for the kind words. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on. This is 3 years in a row now, so I think we've got a little, continuous show going, so that's great. But always great to tune into the show and to to be on it tonight, so that's great. Looking forward to talking draft and Nuggets with you.
We've got some rhythm going, and I think we've had some success in talking about some of the guys that the Nuggets have ultimately selected. We both brought up Christian Brown as a name that the Nuggets would be targeting back in 2022. Yep. We both brought up Julian Strother that the Nuggets would be targeting in 2023. They certainly surprised us in some of the other selections that they made, but Peyton Watson has worked out, and we will see about Jalen Pickett and Hunter Tyson, who are on full deals. And we'll hopefully get some more contributions going forward. But there's nobody that I want to talk to more at this point in time than you, because you have the proper blend between looking forward and looking at the now of what the Nuggets are doing, what the NBA is looking like, and what the draft prospects are looking like in the upcoming classes. I got to tell you, I fake it until I make it on so much of this draft coverage. I do what I can while trying to cover the Denver Nuggets full time. But as somebody who tries to do as much thinking of the now and kind of projecting for the Nuggets specifically, I totally respect the ability to actually do both of those things at the same time. So looking forward to all the draft analysis. And everybody, if you aren't already following CT, make sure to go follow him at CTFazio24 on Twitter for all of the best work possible. Now I'm supposed to let you say something and acknowledge what you said.
No, I appreciate it. Thank you for the kind words. But yeah, no, the draft's been, it's been fun, going, after the Brown draft that we did, that was the first draft that we talked about Straw the last year. I think it was a different set of circumstances after the championship last year. Just seeing, which direction the Nuggets would go. I know me and you, we didn't think they'd take three guys, to the roster. And that was definitely a shock to us. I know we kind of talked about Straw there a lot, and Brown in the year before that. So I think the Pickett and the Tyson selections were definitely surprising, especially that Booth gave them multi-year guaranteed deals too. But yeah, no, this draft, they have 28-56. So I'm pretty excited to see which direction they go this time. And, I know we got some names to discuss.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. The draft is always, especially in this range where Denver's got two picks in the late areas, 28-56. You just never know what to expect in these particular zones, because somebody could drop that you had no idea would drop in those zones. Like somebody that you thought was going to go 15th because there's some medical yellow flag or red flag that drops and is now suddenly available. Or maybe there's some information that teams didn't like about somebody that allows you to consider somebody that you had no idea could possibly be in your zone. The Nuggets have been mostly steady in terms of the first picks that they've taken. We can talk about that, and we'll talk more about the Nuggets specifically a little bit more in the second segment and the third segment. But for everybody that's in here, and Nuggets fans specifically, I wanted to give everybody at least an impression of what this draft is. And from a larger perspective, there's been a lot of discussion about how strong this draft is, what players are going to look like going forward. I'm curious your perspective. You've been looking at this draft for a while. Who do you think is the best player in this class?
That's a tough question. I've gone back and forth on it for a while. Like you said, I think this draft is pretty comparable to 2013, where I think you'll find some guys that could be, all-stars. I think this draft is the same way. But I think in this draft particularly, you're not going to find guys at the top that are all-star caliber level players. You look at past drafts like a Luka, even like a Trae Young, even like going down to third on the board. But if you look at like a Luka, a Paolo, a Wemby, a Zion even, right? It's just this class is not even comparable to that when it comes to the top end talent. I do think this draft has a lot of depth, which, could be great for playoff teams that are picking down the line. But when it comes to the top of this draft, I do think that there's definitely a talent disparity between past class. And then to answer your question about the best player in the class, for me, I currently have Alex Saar number one on my board. I just think he's not a surefire bet, but I do think he's a good bet to take as far as a player who kind of you can mimic in a way to Evan Mobley, really switchable defender. I think he's going to be a really good defender on that end of the floor, switchable, scheme versatile as well, can play in drop coverage, can play, switch, can play in, a hedge or a blitz as well. I just think defensively, I think that's a guarantee. I as pretty close to a guarantee as you can get as being a really, really solid defensive prospect on that end of the floor. And I think offensively he's shown flashes of self-creation at times and pick and pops. And he kind of moves like a wing, in a 7'1" body. So he's my number one prospect right now. And then in my tier one, I have him. I have Ron Holland as well, who didn't have a great year with the Ignite. Mm-hmm. But I do think he has star potential. And has potential to be maybe a multi-year all-star or one-time all-star. And then I have Nikola Topic as well in my tier one, out of Mega. So those are three guys in my top tier right now. And I think, you know, even if you go a little further down the board, like I really like Donovan Clingan. Was fortunate enough to see him in person a couple times this year, you know, being on the East Coast with UConn. I think he's going to be a really good player too. But I would say Sarr is probably the best player in this class, at least from my personal perspective and board.
It's interesting. We haven't talked at all. I haven't talked to you about any of those guys. We're two for three on the guys that we think could be at the top. And we're thinking maybe Topic and Holland and guys like that could potentially fall out of the lottery.
Crazy.
Based off of injury or just different concerns. It's so weird. I don't understand, like, just coming from an outside perspective, like dropping in about, like, because I started focusing on this right after Denver got eliminated in middle of May.
Right.
And I'm looking at all of the conversations surrounding these players, guys like Reed Shepard and even Devin Carter and like some role players that I like. I think that these guys are very interesting and they could be very helpful for teams. And I'm just looking at, and like I pick those guys just out of a hat. I could pick any of the names. Clingan is a good example, actually. These guys going to go one? Are we serious? Like, is this really a possibility that this player goes first overall in this draft? And I'm very flummoxed by it because I agree with you that Sarr, he's one of the guys that I think makes the most sense from a talent standpoint, a pop standpoint, somebody who could be an all-star. Right. Topic is another one. I'd guess if I had to guess who are these guys going to be all-stars in their careers, Topic is one that I would think has that potential because of the way that he can control the game. And then you're going to be surprised by the other name that I'm actually, you may not be surprised. Khalil Ware. Like that's the other one. Like of those three, those are the three that I think have all-star potential in this draft from like a pop standpoint and like a actual ceiling standpoint. And it's not a surprise to me that Ware is suddenly jumping into like lottery consideration because teams are suddenly starting to realize that. But it's so funny, man. Like it does compare to 2013 for that reason, because if you remember, not a lot of all-stars in 2013, especially at the top.
Yep. Definitely. No, for sure. I think it's, you know, it's pretty comparable in that aspect that the top end talent, it's just not really on par with, you know, past years. Like even like you said, like even Wemby after that, like the top end talent wasn't, you know, incomparable to like other years as well. You know, but even just looking at 2013, you look at some of the guys in that class, like Oladipo, you know, obviously had a pretty good career. KCP was in that draft as well.
It was going to be part of my trivia. Damn. Going to be part of my trivia. You know, I'm interrupting you here. The top four guys in minutes played from the 2013 NBA draft were actually, you know what? You tell me because you probably know.
Wow. So KCP, since you gave it to me.
Yeah. Damn.
KCP, McCollum, I'd say his number is on there as well. CJ.
Yep.
Giannis.
Yep.
And one more. If I were to guess, probably. I don't know if Oladipo would meet the threshold, though, because he was injured for, you know, a couple seasons. Was it Oladipo?
Oladipo was not. I think he was, like, 10th.
Okay, wow. Steven Adams?
It's a big name. Name that Nuggets fans are probably pretty familiar with.
Oh, Gobert.
Yes, that's right.
Wow.
Giannis at 25K, KCP at 24K, McCollum and Gobert each at 23K. But you're looking at the 13th pick? KCP, I don't remember what pick he was. McCollum was 11. He went 8? Okay. Yep. McCollum went to 11 or 10, one of the two, and yep. Gobert went 27. So, like, none of those guys in the top seven, like, the top half of the lottery is what we're talking about here. And, like, Oladipo would have been had he stayed healthy. I don't think anybody questions that, but that's the thing about drafts like these is everything's going to get so funky, and the Nuggets, they just have to stay in it in order to like take their hit on a guy that could potentially be helpful. I think like just listening to some of the conversation about some of these guys, role players more abundant in this one than 2013. Like there just wasn't talent in 2013 is what the real issue was. And so it's funny. Tim Connelly gets a lot of flack for trading out of that draft and then giving up the Gobert pick. But he was right. If you look after that, he was right. There was no reason to keep it.
I think that was one of his first moves as general manager, right?
It was the first one.
Unreal. Eric Green and Cash.
Oh, Joffrey Laverne was another one. Shout out to King Joffrey.
Yep.
Yeah.
The king.
Okay. So other than Alex Saar, Kalel Ware for me, and Nikola Topic, I also had three guards that I think could surprise. And it's funny, all of them are kind of falling to various degrees in this draft. Jared McCain of Duke, who's like elite skill is shooting, clearly.
Yep.
Carlton Carrington, Bub Carrington, who his elite skill is going off the dribble and shooting. And Isaiah Collier, whose elite skill is getting into the paint. All three of those guys have elite skills. And that's kind of the clear high watermark for me of guys that can actually succeed at the NBA level and maybe even flash at the NBA level. It's just so crazy that some of those guys are falling. Like Isaiah Collier, did you see him mocked at 26 in one of the most recent mock drafts? That's insane.
Crazy. It's really crazy. Yeah, with Collier's in particular, I think for me, we're probably going to talk about him later on in the show. Yeah. I have him top five on my board, my personal board right now. I just think that, I know we were speaking the other day, just the context at USC for him with the surrounding talent, it was just, really, really suboptimal, my opinion. And, he was playing with players who couldn't catch the ball and lack of floor spacing. If you watch, a couple of games, I've watched a little bit more Collier recently because I think there might be a chance that he's there for Denver. And obviously from my prior scouting as well, it's just like, seeing like the opposing team just converge on him and have three guys just whenever he has like a rim attempt, try to just converge on him and force him to kick it out and a shooter on USC to just not make the shot. Yeah. So in that aspect, I just think like as far as the context, is concerned, I think that was probably the worst context dependent fit in the class for now. So I think that's kind of unfortunately had an effect on his draft stock. But yeah, and Collier in particular, I just think that he's going to return top five value in this class, as being a 6'4 guard. Really great at generating rim pressure. I know the three-point number didn't look that great, but if you kind of look at the spacing that he had and all the creation that he was able to kind of do, it's just he had like a really large offensive burden. So I kind of take that into account, him playing with better floor spacing and NBA players. I just think it's going to be much different, outlook for him moving forward. Yeah,
and he just also looks like one of those guys that is a little bit overwhelmed by – like, hey, I'm the only guy out here. What the hell do right. I do? How do I surround, how do I actually include everybody else when I'm really the only guy that could do anything? And there's something to that. He will have to adjust, but I don't know if teams clearly have not seen him as a guy that can adjust. Like, that's one of the reasons why he's falling, I assume. So it's going to be interesting to see whether he can turn that around. But in a system like Denver, where your job is pretty simple. And for the backup point guard, the job is pretty simple. Get the ball into the paint and get the ball to Nikola Jokic. Seems right. like a pretty easy or relatively easy pathway to success. So I don't know. I'm curious, man. It's going to be fascinating to see that. Any other guys at the top of the draft that you think we should discuss that aren't necessarily going to be there? Like, is there a bust that you're like, hey, I don't believe in this guy at all?
Yeah. Contrary to, a lot of draft Twitter is very high on him and, I don't know. I just see myself kind of going against the perspective, Reed Sheppard for me. I just have a difficult time. And I know the advanced metrics really favor Reed. And again, I think he had a great year at Kentucky, so I don't want to take anything away from him. I just have a difficult time seeing a 6'2 ish off guard working. I think dependently, like if he goes to the Spurs, then I'll say, okay, I think he'll make it now. Because if you're combined with, Jeremy Sochan and Victor, Wembanyama as your defensive anchors, I think that's going to make up for Reed's deficiencies, right? But, I do think Reed will figure it out. But as far as like a top five grade for me, I wouldn't say Reed will be a bust, but I just don't think he'll return top five-ish value in that spot where I see a lot of people ranking him highly. I see actually some people even have him at one, and I can't get there. I'm just being like a 6'2 off guard who's not really a point guard and who can't really – really generate that much paint pressure. It's kind of a questionable thing for me.
Yeah, I mean, he just strikes me as an elite role player. And maybe that will work. Maybe he's a guy that is a clear, like, sixth man type that comes in as a combo guard and then absolutely kills it in some of those circumstances. But again, when you're being drafted at the top five, you got to be like you're looking for stars. And I think so many of these guys are going to be pressured into trying to become stars by their fan base. And the circumstances are going to fall short. It is going to happen with so many of these guys that a lot of teams are going to be left wanting and being left disappointed unless they place the proper expectations on it immediately. So like they're going to need the proper context. And he's certainly a guy that I could see that happening with. Like, I see why people like him. I just don't believe in him as like, oh yeah, you're going to make him your lead guard. Okay.
Right.
All right.
And that's the bet on him. And that's the bet. That would be the bet on him, right? If he goes number one, I wouldn't really see like the bet for him would be, you know, play as an off guard and we're going to take you number one. I think that would be like, we're going to put the ball in your hands and you're going to make reads in a pick and roll all the time. And we're going to see if you can, you know, generate paint pressure and, you know, hit shots at, you know, as a, you know, and pick and roll as a pull up, you know, pull up shooter and things like that, which I think he could. I actually buy his 3-point shot. But I just do think at 6'2", it's just going to be tough in the NBA for him to kind of, especially defensively, I just think it's going to be really tough. He's gonna have to guard like the least, you know, offensive threat, you know, on the other team. So I just think in that aspect, I don't know if he'll be a bust, but I don't think he's going to return top five value in the class. That's kind of my hot take for the top of this class.
Well, given that everything is flat and that everybody's trying to figure out who are we going to draft in the top five, I can understand that. I can understand you making that bet and that probably panning out. So look, we'll see what happens with it, but tell you what, let's take a break. When we come back, we're going to pivot to the Nuggets. We're going to talk about 20th overall pick, 56th overall pick, and some names that Nuggets fans need to be watching out for. We will be right back. But first, I got to tell everybody about number 38, the best place in Rhino for you to go hang out with your friends, go get some brunch food, go get some beers, go hang out on their patio. It's a lot of fun. This is one of the best spots in all of Denver, with a little outdoor stage, an indoor area where it's massive. You're going to have as much space as you need, and you can hang out, watch some games, or just hang out with some friends. It's a lot of fun. Make sure to go check them out. Number 38 up in Rhino, and let them know that you came from Mile High Sports. We'll be right back on Pickaxe and Roll.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey, we're back. Pickaxe and Roll, Ryan Blackman here. Thank you so much for tuning into the show. Joined by my guy CT Fazio on the other side, talking the NBA draft. And now we're going to discuss the Nuggets a little bit. If you're here live, thank you so much for being here live. Drop some Nuggets questions in the chat and we will try to answer them as much as we can. Also, hit that like button and that subscribe button while you're here. First, CT, let's get into 28th overall pick, 56th overall pick. How strongly do you feel about Denver keeping those picks versus trading those picks for a veteran or two based off of where their roster is right now?
Yeah, no. So I think it's an interesting question, right? I know you've been on your show going back and forth with that, with, you know, that discussion as well. And, you know, I've been tuning into Lockdown, the DNVR guys too. You know, they've been talking about it as well. I think it's an interesting conversation. I just don't know how far the 28th pick could get you. In this class specifically, if you're going to trade up into the draft, like, I don't think if you're attaching the first to Zeke Nagy and others, right, I don't know how much further up the board you could get, if at all. You know, I don't know if you're going to get any further up the board, maybe to 26 or so, possibly if you trade 28 and other kind of players, maybe. You know, I think obviously the trade piece that a lot of people have brought up is MPJ, and I'm just not there to trade him yet. This offseason, I think he probably deserves another go around to bring back. But yeah, no, I personally think that if the Nuggets going to stick to their plan, right, as far as the project, you know, dynasty talk with, you know, bringing in draft picks, I think they should personally keep the pick. But I did pose the question the other day on Twitter. I said, you know, how many young players can the Nuggets realistically add to the mix since they have five guys already on cost control deals, you know, in Christian Brown, Peyton Watson, Strother, Pickett, and Tyson, right? And I think it's an interesting question, and I wouldn't be surprised if they traded the pick just to kind of measure out the roster and have like a little bit more of a balance. But also, too, I think if the Nuggets are serious about continuing this draft and develop plan with their starting lineup, which I'm all for keeping the core four together for as long as possible, you know, until proven otherwise. You know, I think this year was just an outlier as far as them losing. You know, a lot of stuff went wrong for the Nuggets, you know, with Murray's injury, and they come off with, you know, a championship last year, and just they're kind of gassed at the end of it. And, you know, Gobert was hitting fadeaway shots at the end. So I just think for me, it's like I'd rather give this team another chance. I think they deserve it, you know, especially after winning the championship. So I would personally, I think I would keep the pick because I don't really think the first rounder is going to net much, especially in a class that's been, you know, tabbed as not being a great class. So I think there's more value in keeping the pick and adding another guy to the mix. And again, I think maybe a consolidation trade with a Pickett or a Tyson, which I'm sure we'll get to in a second, is something that I would look forward to, you know, to see if they can kind of work out.
Yeah, I think it makes sense. And I think it's going to be a battle between not just Malone and Booth, but just like making sure that as many players as possible are contributing in a consistent way. It's something that I think going forward with the second apron being such a big deal, so many of these rosters, and you just look at the rosters that were actually successful this year, they had 10, 11, 12 guys that they could realistically go to in the regular season and then pare it down in the playoffs, obviously, but it allowed their starters to stay fresh. Dallas and Boston certainly come to mind there, as does Indiana. Indiana made it to the Eastern Conference Finals in particular because they had so many guys that they could go to. So I'm thinking that Denver adding a guy certainly makes sense. I wonder if with that 56th overall pick or if they move around, shift around something a little bit. I think that that guy being on a two-way contract makes more sense this time around.
Agreed.
I don't necessarily want to fill too many full-time roster spots with guys that you don't expect to play.
Yeah,
that's just like it's tough. It's really, really tough to see that happening. So we'll see what they ultimately end up doing. But now, should the Nuggets draft for need versus drafting best player available? This is the age old question where you get this as a draft analyst a lot, I'm sure. I have to imagine that right now with where the Nuggets are, drafting for need is okay. And how I define need personally is fills a clearly defined role within Denver's current and future plans. You don't necessarily think that they're going to be a star, but you think that they can fill a plan. And rather than just taking the guy that was projected to go 15th overall and is instead in your lap at 28th, maybe that's not the best course of action for the entire, like for one reason or another. It depends on the guy, obviously, and if they fit in, great. But if that person doesn't fit with you, what do you think? What do you think Denver should do in that situation?
Yeah, no, another interesting question. I think for, you know, if you go back to the Christian Brown draft, right, when we were talking about that class, we wanted to draft for need, you know, as well, because the Nuggets just had no wing defenders at that point.
Yeah.
So 100%. I think CB also was a like best player available on the board. I do think that he was, you know, part of that mix and discussion as well. I think last year, you know, Booth kind of said in his presser that he was looking for more shooting off the bench, which was valid, you know, valid concern. And I think, you know, Strother, if you look at his kind of first season, was up and down. The percentages obviously weren't great, but, you know, he had an injury too that we have to factor in. So I think I would give an incomplete grade for his year last year. But I think for this year, I would go for need. The Nuggets have two clearly defined needs, I think. And I do think if we're talking about the rotation, right, I preferably would like to put the rotation as the backup guard and center as veterans, guys. You know, I'm sure we'll speak a little bit more about that later. You know, like adding like a Chris Dunn, and then as a center in the backup would be like a Goga Batadze, right? Somebody like that. Sure. I think they do need two more veteran guys to go along with the bench, because I think relying on solely young guys is a difficult ask of a championship roster. But I think going for fit at 28 is something that I would look to go to as far as a backup point guard and a backup center. Those are the two guys, especially in my kind of scouting and analysis for the Nuggets, would be two clearly defined roles and needs that the Nuggets need moving forward, especially looking at a point guard, right? You look at Murray this year, he was the only ball handler really that could, scale up, because he couldn't play with Reggie due to defensive concerns, right? And if you look in the back, in the center spot, Jokic was the sole big, and he had to play Gordon at backup center, even a lot more during the regular season as well, due to the fact that DeAndre obviously is getting older and then Zeke was simply unplayable. But, I think the two needs of concern for Denver are guard, backup point guard, and a center.
Undoubtedly so. I have the markdown here, backup center, and then I wrote versatile point guard. Not necessarily somebody who is one or the other between a point guard and a combo guard, but you want somebody that can do some things of both traits, because they're going to play with Jamal Murray at times and without Jamal Murray at times, with Nikola Jokic at times, without Nikola Jokic at times. So you want somebody who can handle a variety of different situations and then run a pick and roll by themselves with a normal rim runner if you can. So it'll be interesting to see them flesh that out. I wanted to start with more centers in this segment, and then we can go to more guards and wings in segment three. Daron Holmes was the one who I brought you on really to talk about specifically. Mm-hmm. We've both heard different things about Daron Holmes and what he's like, what his draft range is. It looks like he's rising. He just got a green room invite. There has been a rumor that he's been promised by the Nuggets, and I don't think that that's necessarily off base. I think that he is the perfect fit for Denver at that spot. I really do. I think that of the players that you can get at the 28th overall pick, he's not going to be an all-star, but he's going to be solid. And you just need somebody that's solid that can do a bunch of different things. And to me, he could do a variety of different things and doesn't look like he's going to be scared out there. So what do you, resident Daron Holmes stan, think of Daron Holmes?
Yeah, no, I think you hit the nail on the head there. I think Daron Holmes is the ideal player in this draft for the Nuggets. Obviously, a little bit of an older prospect with Booth, which Booth has, targeted in past classes, other than Watson. I just think Holmes, his versatility stands out, and something that I think he could play with Jokic and he could play without Jokic. And I think if you look at the backup bigs in the past, right, DeAndre can't play with Jokic. Zeke now at this point, maybe 2 or 3 years ago we saw it, but now he can't play with Jokic because he can't space the floor.
It's funny, man. Like, he was supposed to be able to. That was the entire reason why Calvin Booth signed him to that extension. Mm-hmm. Because he thought, okay, I can get a guy that could play next to and behind Nikola Jokic. And it just did not work. Yep. There have been some comparisons of Holmes to Zeke Nnaji. So just want to get your thoughts on that.
Yeah, no, I think that's way off base, I think, in my opinion. Zeke wasn't a shooter in college. Holmes this year, he shot 39% on 3 threes a game. He's a guy who's an inside-outside threat. He's actually a really good ball handler as well. Anthony Grant was a former, assistant for the Thunder. He coached at Alabama as well, and then he's now coaching at Dayton. And he's a guy who runs a really great, NBA kind of style offense. And Daron actually, aside from running pick and rolls as, the roller, he would run pick and rolls as the ball handler as well. And Dayton had a lot of shooters too. So Daron would, he'd be running, initiating pick and rolls, hitting cutters, hitting guys, popping out for three as well. So I think with Holmes is that you could arguably run a pick and roll with Holmes and Jokic, I think. I think that'd be something that you can run. But also too, with the bench, Holmes could run a pick and roll with a Strawler. He can run a pick and roll with a CB, right? I think that's something that the Nuggets just haven't had since DeMarcus Cousins. They haven't had an offensively potent big since Cousins. And I think with Holmes, 20 points a game, All-American this year, eight rebounds, three assists, a night. And he's a really good passer too. At a short roll, so he could pass,
right,
quick decision maker. And that's what you need now in the NBA. You need, as your bigs, you need quick decision makers. You need guys that can put pressure on the rim offensively. And the Nuggets, I'm curious to hear what you think about it as well. Like, the Nuggets just lacked versatility this year off the bench. They lacked problem solvers. I kind of wrote in my like postseason article as well. Like, the Nuggets just lacked, you know, threats off the bench. You know, there was a lot of redundancy with the skill sets there. And I think, you know, with Blacko going out too, I think he would have helped too. You know, we'll see for next year. But I think with Holmes is that he's an inside-outside big, really scheme versatile defensively as well. He could switch on different players.
Right.
Really good in drop coverage, you know, as a shot blocker and a rim protector. Could, you know, could play in a blitz, could play in a hedge. I just think the Nuggets, like I said, just lack scheme versatility. And I think Holmes, his ability to play with Jokic, play with the bench himself as a sole big, and put pressure on teams offensively while being a pretty good defender, I think it'd be a perfect, like, perfect fit for Denver going into next year.
I like the idea of a player being able to work at all three levels. One of them being, yep, hey, we're going to pick and pop you. We're going to make sure to space the floor and go five out. Well, he can fill that mold. If you want to use him in the short role where he's not getting all the way to the rim, but then he's making decisions and splashing it out to other 3-point guys, or maybe dumping it down into the short corner, the dunker spot. Yeah. That's a great thing for him to do as well. He'll be capable of doing that. And then if you also just want to run like all the way to the rim and have him go above the rim, he's athletic enough to do that too. So I yep. see this as a very, very important piece that Denver could add to their team. And I'm fully on board with you, man. I think that if he's there, they should try to get him. I don't know if he's going to be there. If he was available at 24, 23, and then you get a little bit antsy that somebody's going to snag him right in front of you, I think he's also worth an option to trade up. I'm not sure what Denver has in order to trade up, and that would make sense for a lot of teams. But if it's a couple second round picks, do it.
Yep. I agree. No, I would definitely trade 28 and say a Pickett or a Tyson if possible to move up. For me personally, I'm just not, I know we kind of spoke last year as well. Personally, I just was lower on Tyson and Pickett on my board. Sure. I just don't, just to be transparent, I don't think those guys are going to help Denver in a playoff setting. I just think Pickett for me is a guy who's a really one-dimensional point guard as far as like playing without Jokic is kind of his sell. And I think that's like a false kind of like a false direction there, because Jokic is going to be on the floor in the playoffs for like 40 plus minutes a night. Right. So it's like you're really a specific need. And I think Pickett could be a good player. Don't get me wrong. I just think for Denver, I think they need more scheme versatile guys. And, you know, Tyson as well, you know, I don't want to write these guys off after 1 year. I think that'd be an unfair, you know, kind of assessment, but you know, the Nuggets are in a window now where they have to get everything. They have to get, you know, decisions right. And if they have to trade one of those guys to move up for Holmes, I think I would do it.
I will agree and also say I still, it's funny. One of my most popular podcast episodes ever was, is Hunter Tyson the greatest Nugget of all time? from after the way that he played at Summer League. We'll see whether he actually like can translate it to an NBA context, but I just want to see those guys before necessarily making those decisions. But if that's the price of business, then sometimes you have to do it. So
yep.
This is why Calvin Booth has a really tough job, and
yep.
I will never criticize him overly much, because one, they won a championship, and two, this is all really difficult.
Mm-hmm.
Other bigs, and we'll go kind of rapid fire here through some of these other guys. Kyle Filipowski of Duke, do you believe in him?
I do. I do believe in Kyle Filipowski. He was actually on my list here from what I had in my notes. A flip for me, I think, is he would be a really good option, I think, as Denver's backup center, because I think you can kind of mirror what Jokic, obviously not what Jokic does, but you could run similar stuff as far as being a post hub, right? And it's kind of like, I think a lot of the Nuggets' problems is that playing without Jokic is like a difficult ask, because playing with him is a really, like, has taken years to kind of figure out like how to reach peak levels, right? And I think now with Flip is that you can use him as a post hub. He's a really, really good passer for a big, like in short roles, like he makes really quick decisions. Like him and McCain in the pick and roll this year was a really dynamic duo. And McCain was hitting him on short roles, and he was firing out to different shooters. Like, you know, Tyrese Proctor was another guy who was pretty good for Duke as well. But I think Flip is a guy you could use in the post. He's got great footwork and he's physical too. Like, I know a lot of people were kind of down on him after the tournament run, but I really like the way that he's, you know, he throws, throws body around the post. He's got multiple fakes and footwork that he could use. And he's a stretch big as well. You know, flip shot, I think 35% from three this year. So pretty good on, I think, three attempts a game.
Which will fluctuate throughout his career. That's with all these guys. I don't necessarily look at the number as much as I look at the willingness and the free throw percentage and things like that. Like, and he seems willing.
Definitely, for sure. And I think the Nuggets off their bench, like as for a big is concerned, like they either need like a rim roller, like a really like good rim roller to roll to the rim and put pressure that way, or they need to play five out, in my opinion, where you can stretch the defense, right? If you want to play them with Brown and Watson, you can't have a guy who's like a non-shooter. I think Flip is a guy who could, he attacks closeouts, from three. A really good matchup was him against Missy this year for Baylor. That was a great matchup. And he kind of was able to attack him with closeouts and, get to the rim there as well. So I think with Flip is that the defense is definitely a concern, but I think you could play him like Jokic does, play him at the level of the screen. He's not going to be an overly great rim protector, but if you play him at the level of the screen, you have guys like Watson and Brown to be your backup help.
I made this point with the point guard conversation that's why you have Brown and Watson. That's why you have these guys who are these unbelievable defenders that you have off your bench. You made a commitment to getting them. Get a bad defensive center, but somebody that lifts your offense up, and then let the defensive wings do the work. Like it's not a problem, especially in the regular season. Now, could it be a problem in the playoffs? Sure. But then you've got to work with Jokic in the playoffs. So like it's the same conversation. So it's funny, man. I think that he would be great. I think that there's a variety of other guys that would be pretty solid too. Are you a Zach Edey fan?
I have Edey top 20 on my board. I think I have him at 17 right now. So I'd say I'm not like overly high on him. I know a couple draft Twitter people have him like pretty high up. But I think Edey's going to be, I think he's going to work in the NBA. I do. And especially in this class with the depth that's at the top, like I'm willing to take that bet. And I think Edey for sure, like he's has some limitations. You know, if you watch, I don't know if you watched the national championship, but Newton was just carving him up and pick and roll over and over again, which I'm sure we'll talk about him in a second. But I do think like a pick and roll, like, you know, him guarding a pick and pop big is going to be a problem. Him guarding and pick and roll as a lob threat might be a problem as well. But I just think Edey, he really improved his offensive game this year. It's like you could dump it down to him in the post and he can like attack mismatches, where it's not like a Gobert situation where it's like you throw him the ball and it's not, you know, you can kind of put like a guard on him and it won't really be that much of an issue, right? I think with Edey, like he can punish mismatches defensively too. I think he's going to be really good, especially if you can play him in a drop, in certain matchups. But I think with him, he's just a guy I'm willing to take that bet on. I think his passing too is pretty decent for a big as well. So I think like in the top, like even the lottery, like I have a board coming out tomorrow. Like it's not finalized yet, but I wouldn't be like shocked if I put him like 14, like 15 around there. I think that's like reasonable, like a reasonable bet to take with him.
Especially in this class, like you want somebody that can command some sort of respect down there, and he would absolutely do that. Whether he's mobile enough to do it, we'll see. But I mean, I was looking at some of the actual athletic testing numbers. He's not that much slower or even slower at all than some of these other guys. Like he can still move reasonably well. So I'm curious to see how it translates. And maybe he just looks like he's moving slow because he's got that face where it just looks like he's working. It's kind of like the Joker face where like he just looks like he's working really hard. And then he also is just 7'4". So everything he does looks like it's in slow motion. It kind of is. It reminds me of the Michael Porter defense conversation where everything he does looks like it's in slow motion, but then you realize, oh, he covered a lot of ground there. So, we'll be interesting to see it. Eve Misi, Khalil Ware, likely off the board. I'm not necessarily worried as much about them, but I do think that they're pretty good. As I mentioned with Ware specifically, having somebody that can pick and pop like that and also is athletic enough to do what he does, that's a pretty strong skill set. Oso Iguodaro, actually, you pronounce that name. Oso Iguodaro.
Iguodaro.
Sound pretty good? Okay.
You got it. You got it.
How is he? Because I'm looking at him. I saw some Brandon Clark comparisons and got pretty excited about that. Is he athletic enough to play that Brandon Clarke kind of role? Because I've always thought that Clarke would be a pretty interesting match with Jokic.
Yeah, no, for sure. I think that comp is, pretty good. I think with Clarke is he's more athletic than Oso as far as guarding like perimeter forwards. And Clarke too, like he had really great touch in college. I was like really high on Clarke back in that draft. With Oso, I watch him a lot because, you know, I watch a lot of the Big East. And with Oso, I'm probably a little bit lower on him, I think, than the consensus. I have a second round grade on him. So I wouldn't take him in the first with their pick at 28. I think he's a bit undersized to play the big, to play center, I think. I think he's like 6'10 or so. So he's a little bit on the smaller side there for a big. I do like his touch, but I do worry that, you know, like him in the short role is going to be a bit of an issue, like putting pressure on the paint scoring. But he's a really good passer, though. Really good passer out of the short role, quick decision maker. I wouldn't be surprised if he carves out a role as a backup big. I just think for Denver, like in the first round, I would maybe in the second round, like a 56 if he gets there, maybe it could be an option. But I do have concerns about his height and his ability offensively because he can't shoot either from three. So he's kind of like limited to more of like in the paint. So I'm just kind of concerned with how he matches up against like bigger centers. Sure. As well as, you know, well as kind of like his offensive arsenal too.
To be fair, Denver's got Jokic for some of those bigger centers, so I'm not necessarily as concerned in those circumstances. Like, there's only one Andre Drummond in the league, and it's Andre Drummond for some of these backup guys. So I'm not necessarily as worried about how big they're going to be from a backup perspective. But I think he's interesting, and I think he's smart, which is one of the reasons why I wanted to include him here. Like, he's playing with Tyler Kolek, with Marquette, but that definitely helps. And I think that there's some similarities between those two guys in terms of maybe a little bit undersized, but might be pretty helpful for a team. So we'll see what happens. Tell you what, let's take another break. I think we're at that time. When we come back, we're going to go over some guards, some combo guards, and maybe even some wings if we can get to them. We've got plenty to cover still here on Pickaxe and Roll. We will be right back. And actually, that is going to do it for this episode of Pickaxe and Roll. Make sure to stick around for part two tomorrow. That will come out. We'll talk about the combo guards and the wings that I just referenced at the end of this episode. Thank you so much, everybody. We'll talk to you soon.